We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome inside the Guilty as Charged podcast. My name is Steven, and I am your host. We are back live with Chargers Analytics with Arjun for the first time since week one. So, Arjun, thanks for taking the time to join me today. How are you doing tonight?
Doing good. Pretty excited for the game tonight. Like I said on my Twitter, like I think this is a matchup between the team that overperformed last year and I think the team that's overperforming so far this year. So I'm excited to see how this one plays out, and obviously, you know, have a lot to talk about in regards to the Chargers.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully this is a better primetime game than the last two primetime games we have gotten after the Cowboys and Giants and Niners and Broncos. So should be fun regardless. I'm expecting a lot of points tonight. After the did you see the Dolphins were on the field for like 90 snaps or something like that against the Bills? The Dolphins defense, that is, was just some crazy number. Not expecting a great defensive performance tonight. But of course, we're going to have Arjun's scouting report on the Texans and kind of the latest about the Chargers tonight. Before we get started there, Arjun, I do want to get your thoughts here. Obviously, news of the week. The decision to start Jamari Sawyer instead of Storm Norton in place of Rashawn Slater. Obviously, a lot of other injuries, potentially Keenan Allen dealing with a re-aggravation of his hamstring injury, which is not great. But the decision to start Jamari Sawyer, what are your thoughts there instead of rolling with Storm Norton?
Yeah, pretty much to me, any option besides Norton was an upgrade. I do have a little bit of concern because even though Sawyer played left tackle in college, he pretty much trained kind of as a guard. He's been doing OTAs and training camp as a guard. So a little bit of a concern there. But again, like, I think you'd rather find out what you have in Sawyer because you already know what you have with Storm Norton. So I'm okay with the move. You know, people will look at the Texans and be like, oh, it's a good way to get him active. Look, Jerry Hughes has been on his hair this year. Jonathan Greenard is a underrated pass rusher. So it's not like he's being thrown into a game where he won't be tested. Like, this will be a good starting test, even if like the Texans aren't that competitive as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, kind of the strengths of this Texans team are their pass rushers and their offensive tackles. So you'll get a big test right away for Sawyer and for Chris Rumm. So you know, I said this on our show yesterday. It's a lot of nervous excitement for Jamari because I think he's he's up for the task, but it's relative, right? Like, yeah, obviously you hope for the best here, but there's going to be some weaknesses that he's going to have to overcome, that this team is going to have to scheme open for and make life easier on him. I think this is, again, another game where you have to really kind of help your offensive line out by running the ball and giving them some easy looks, so you're not asking Sawyer to be on an island against all the guys that you mentioned. So, yes, he played offensive tackle in college and did it really well, but it is going to be a big adjustment for him from an athletic profile standpoint, for sure.
Yeah, and that's the big thing for me, is like going from Slater to Sawyer, the athletic profile downgrade is so big, and like that concerns me with the run game that's already been pretty pathetic to start the season. So like the outside zone plays, the toss plays, I think you're not scrapping them, but I wouldn't have as much confidence in them with Sawyer there instead of Slater, who I believe you said was in the top 10 in both pass block and run block win rate.
Yeah, so I was looking at ESPN's metrics this morning, and Rashawn was the only left tackle in the top 10 in pass block win rate and run block win rate on ESPN. Again, there's a lot of differences, you know, between, you know, how ESPN tracks things and how PFF tracks things. But when somebody is elite in both categories, you obviously take notice of that. Khalil Mack, same thing, along with Jalen Phillips from a defensive standpoint. So it sucks, man. There's no way around it. Losing Rashawn is a huge, huge, huge deal. And they're going to have to change their game plan. So, you know, it's funny how things work, because last year it was like, okay, you have to run left to, if you want to be effective running the football. Now it's like, you have to run right to Zion and Trey Pipkins, probably, if you want to be effective running the ball, because I don't think having Sawyer and Matt Filer at the focal point of outside zone running schemes is really kind of an effective game plan. But I feel okay with it being Zion and Pipkins to the other side.
Yeah, and as we'll get into in my scouting report, I'll show why the loss of Slater was big, especially in the run game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, well, we are here for your analytics scouting report. Let's dive into it. If you want to be able to share your screen, you should be okay.
I think, or real quick, do we need to talk about the Keenan news that he left practice?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's yeah, it's not great. And I think it's pretty clear that this offense desperately needs him to be healthy. I think, you know, we'll see about, it sounds much more optimistic that Corey and Donald Parham will make their returns this week. But, you know, from the passing game standpoint, it's not going to be much better this week without Keenan. I mean, you're going to get a lot of Derek Stingley and double team on Mike Williams this week, as that's has kind of been the case. So DeAndre Carter, Josh Palmer, like, they have to step up and not just be, I think it was you who called him a garbage time king. Is that Josh Palmer, or was that somebody else who called him that?
It wasn't me, but I don't deny it.
I guess Eckler is more of your garbage time king than Palmer would be.
Yeah. That's a whole different thing. That's a whole different thing. I think my worries with, you know, the Texans, kind of like a cover two defense, a lot of zones, so it's going to be a lot of underneath stuff. So that's where Keenan thrives. And obviously, when you don't have that security blanket, and you know, no one's really been able to replace his type of production, it does worry me a little bit. And especially with soft tissue injuries, you never want to see a setback happen in practice,
especially for a 30 plus year old. So, I do hope that they bring up Michael Bandy at some point, man. I mean, you lose Jalen Guyton and you replace him with Jason Moore, which I don't like that decision at all. So if you don't have Keenan Allen active in this game, I feel like you have to. I mean, we'll see about John Hightower. I don't know if you fully trust him in week one, but you got to get Bandy in there and just make it easier for Herbert at this point.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right, Adrian, let's dive in here to your scouting report on the Texans and the Chargers matchup on Sunday morning.
Yeah. So I have my screen shared if you want to put that up. Yeah, so first I thought we could just go over some, like, not really like KPIs, but some like important metrics that we can use to evaluate, you know, teams and stuff. So first we'll look at offensive three and out rate. Chargers, unfortunately, have the seventh highest three and out rate to start the season, which is pretty bad, right? Like, you're you don't really want to see that. And that kind of just means that the play calling or the execution hasn't been there to start off the drive. And when you start off the drives bad, or when you start off the game bad with a bad drive, then I think it just compounds. So that's what we're seeing here. You know, weirdly enough, the Texans have the third highest three and out rate. So as I'll get into in my next graph, you know, it kind of plays into each other, because the Chargers defense has been pretty bad at forcing three and outs to start the year. They've only forced a three and out 13% of the time, which is the fifth lowest number among all NFL defenses. The Texans aren't much better, only forcing a three and out 17% of the time. So any big takeaways for you there?
So we're either going to see a lot of punting action, or we're going to see these offenses get right in this game. This is a weird trend. I didn't notice this when you were pointing this out earlier, that the Texans were that close on both sides. So something's going to give, as they say, you know, styles make fights. So one of these offenses is probably going to get back on track this week. And obviously you hope it's the Chargers.
Yeah. And again, it's not really that good when the Chargers and Texans are showing up in some key performance indicators. But, you know, wanted to also look at too high stuff. So Chargers running too high at about a league or above league average rate, a little bit lower than where they were last year. They're kind of sitting at around 66, 67% last year. I believe that was about 70-ish, a little bit higher. So running too high, a little bit less. Texans, even though they play a lot of cover two, they show a lot of single high pre-snap. So I thought that was a little bit interesting. You know, maybe that's a film thing where they play like a different version of cover two. But this kind of ties into the last graph I wanted to show, which is like how often defenses rotate post-snap. So either from single high to too high or too high to single high. So, you know, Chargers, obviously with the Vic Fangio influence, doing it at the sixth highest rate, right at about 36%. Texans right about below league average at about like a 22% mark. So now, you know, Chargers do like to rotate a decent amount of the time. Texans don't really rotate their safeties down or back very often.
Yeah, obviously the Chargers one is going to be very interesting, what happens when JC Jackson returns. Hopefully that's this week. I guess we'll see there. But I feel like the slight decrease is really kind of a nod to what they did in week two when he was healthy. Yeah. And I feel like they played a lot more man-to-man than the other 2 weeks where he's been inactive.
Yeah, definitely a lot more cover one in week two. And I think that's a trend that's going to stick. And I hope it does stick. I hope we do run a lot more man when he does come back, because the Chargers have the talent advantage on the outside in most games that he's healthy. So now I'll do my actual scouting report. So that should be up. And so we'll start off looking at, you know, what we normally look at. So we'll start off with the Texans defense. They're pretty much a league average defense at blitzing, and the amount of pass rushers that they send on a given play. Usually the Texans are playing from behind, so not a huge sample size here, but it's going to be a pretty standard game plan, right? Lovie Smith just sits in cover two or cover three for most of the game or quarters. So not a ton to take away from this.
I do want to ask you though really quickly, because obviously no Joey Bosa going forward. Would you say the Chargers increasing their blitz rate would be a smart approach here, or do you think that's not something they should be doing going forward?
I think that's a really good question. I think you do want to blitz more. I think you know you're probably not going to get a ton of pressure from Rumpf and Van Noy, basically from what we've seen the first couple of games, and you want to be able to manufacture pressure. And you know, for Brandon Staley's defense hasn't been the greatest to start the year, but I think he is a pretty good blitz designer. And like when he uses those boss packages where he lines up Tranquil over a guard, or Tranquil and Murray over the B gap or something, that does put the offensive lineman in tough situations. And when you have JC, you know that you can hold up on the back end, or at least I hope you can hold up on the back end. So I think you do want to manufacture pressure as much as you can without Bosa. So that is a very good question, and something I hope they've had discussions about internally.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially this week. I don't know if you saw Nate Tice's tweet, but Davis Mills is one of four quarterbacks this year who have yet to scramble a single time.
Yeah.
So he's going to stay in the pocket. I think you got to heat him up a little bit.
Yeah, agreed, agreed. Okay, so Texans, try to zoom out just a little bit. Texans defense, a lot of heavy boxes, right? They're obviously playing with – it's weird. They're even with a lead against the Colts, they were still playing a little bit of heavier boxes, a lot of 6- and 7-man boxes. They were trailing for most of the game in week two, and then it was pretty much a neutral game script. So the Chargers are going to see a lot of 6- and 7-man boxes, which should benefit the passing game. But, you know, you never know with how the Chargers kind of respond to that, because, like, again, it's kind of like an equal distribution for how much they face the pass and face the run. I believe it was SB Nation's Michael Peterson who said the Texans have allowed the most rushing yards per game, which you kind of see here because they just allow a crap ton of rushing attempts every single game. So you're going to see a lot of heavy boxes. Whether the Chargers take advantage of it, you know, it's up to them. I would hope they go with a heavy play action type offense this week, just because when you have heavy boxes plus play action, the linebackers hopefully will bite a little bit more. So I am curious to see what they do here, but I'm expecting a lot of heavy boxes.
Yeah, and that's quite a change, because Sony Michel and Austin Ekeler have only been getting heavy boxes, I think, on like 12% and 14% of their rushing attempts so far, which again does not paint a pretty picture for those two and the Chargers running game.
Yeah. Okay. Now let's move on to the offense. We'll obviously start off with personnel. So Houston only run 11 personnel about 50.76% of the time. They don't really run a lot of 11. And they kind of like just mix up the rest of their like personnel percentages. So they have like an equal amount of 11, 12, 13, 21, and 22 personnel. So I don't really know what they see there, honestly. And as I get to in my next table, you'll see like the breakdown of it. But yeah, Texans, this could be a heavy base package week, depending on what the Texans show and the personnel they like to run.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Like, I expected heading into the season that Lovie Smith, you know, defensive coach, Pep Hamilton, you know, and his background from Stanford, you know, they'd be trying to run the ball a lot. So, not a huge surprise there.
Yeah. And so when we look at how the Texans performed out of each personnel package, they do very well out of 10 personnel. They're averaging 0.775 EPA per play. So, again, for the listeners, EPA stands for expected points added. It's basically putting a point total on how many points an offense gains or loses based on the results of a play. So they do very, very well out of 10 personnel. They do pretty well out of 21 personnel as well. And there's a decent enough sample size to say, like, you know, they've performed well, and this is not just like a one play anomaly. They love to pass out of 10, which is obvious. And they do love to pass out of 21. So I don't really know who their fullback is. Or they could just be running a lot of Rex Burkhead, Damian Pierce, two-back sets. So even when they're in a two-back set or a three tight end set, they're passing a lot over expected. So that's something that, again, a decent enough sample size to say that even if they come out and heavy personnel with Brevin Jordan, OJ Howard, and I don't even know their third tight end, they're even if they come out in that heavy personnel, we could still expect them to pass the ball a lot. So, and they have been pretty efficient doing so as well.
Yeah. So their fullback is a guy named Troy Hairston. He's only gotten 15 snaps. So, like you said, looks like it's a lot of Burkhead and Damian Pierce on the field at the same time. Yeah. Tight end room was Jordan Akins, but it looks like it's OJ Howard, Farrell Brown, and Brevin Jordan, the former Miami draft pick.
Yeah. So out of 11, which is like the standard personnel they run, they're not predictable at all. They actually like pretty much they do what is expected of them, whether it is running or passing. They aren't efficient at all out of 11 personnel, averaging negative 0.226 EPA per play. So, you know, that's kind of like the downside to them. They don't have any receiving weapons outside of Brandon Cooks. Like, even Nico Collins, who's a former Michigan guy, like, I mean, he's not that good. So it's pretty much like, can you contain Brandon Cooks in the passing game? Or, you know, it's just, I don't know what the game plan is going into this game for the Chargers.
Yeah, them being really bad in 11 personnel, that's very against the grain in terms of 2022 trends.
Yeah, totally. So actually, I should have looked at this before, but you know, with this table, we can kind of see what the breakdown is. So yeah, out of 21 personnel, they like to go Pierce and Burkhead. I wouldn't say together, but they do have, both of them do have snaps. And I would say Pierce is the preferred short yardage back. He does get most of the snaps out of 12, 13, 21, and 22 personnel, mm-hmm. even if on a general level, Burkhead and Pierce have split the reps evenly pretty much the first couple of weeks. And it does seem like Farrah Brown is tight end one, Cooks wide receiver one, Collins wide receiver two, Chris Moore wide receiver three.
Man, that receiving room. Nico Collins wide receiver two, Chris Moore and Chris Conley. My goodness, no wonder they want to run the ball so much.
Yeah, I know. So now we're looking at some of the formation stuff. You kind of just ignore the jumbo personnel stuff. That's only one play, and they don't run anything. They only one play at a pistol. So they've been kind of just like not efficient at all out of single back and shotgun, averaging a negative EPA in both. They aren't that predictable out of either. Like, they do like to run the ball slightly more than expected out of single back. They pass it slightly more than expected out of shotgun, but there's not too many big takeaways from this other than like the Texans overall as an offense just aren't good. And when they go into I formation, it's like, it's just awful. So I am curious to see, like, you know, what they plan to do with Joey Bosa out. Like, do they go a little bit more heavier? Do they go into the eye, or do they get to stay under single back a little bit more? Mm-hmm. But some interesting takeaways we can take away from this table.
Yeah. And like Carlos says here in the chat, lots of Khalil Mack double teams, I'm guessing even though they don't necessarily need to. I think their offensive tackles are pretty good, especially Laramie Tunsil, but I would expect any time Khalil goes against Tytus Howard to have some kind of trip, chip or double team or something like that.
Yeah. And then just looking at the Texans passing game, you can see a lot of red, which isn't good. They don't like to pass it very often, but when they do, it doesn't really end up working most of the time. They pretty much average a negative EPA throwing it to a lot of different parts of the field. When they throw it left, it's just horrendous. So, you know, whoever lines up on the left side is obviously doing a bad job of getting open, or Davis Mills is just forcing the ball. But yeah, I mean, again, the Texans passing offense is atrocious outside of Brandon Cooks. So while this table will mean something in future weeks, I don't really think it means much here, just because the Texans really can't throw the ball efficiently to any part of the field.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously they're in the long game in terms of their rebuild, but I would have expected a bigger jump forward than we've seen from Nico Collins, even if he's not necessarily an elite separator or athlete or anything like that.
Yeah. Agreed. Here are, and this is interesting, here are the Texans receiving weapons and how they performed in terms of expected points added when targeted. Brandon Cooks, when targeted, has been pretty bad. All right. But here's the thing, like, this doesn't represent Brandon Cooks as a receiver. I think we should get that straight. Like, I think this is just a good example of how EPA is kind of more of a team stat than any individual stat. But it is pretty funny that when Mills targets his wide receiver one, he's lost about pretty much 10 points when targeting him this year. That same goes for wide receiver two, and he's done pretty well targeting Chris Moore. So I wonder if like Chris Moore has like a third or fourth down touchdown that he's caught at some point in the year. But
I know OJ Howard had the two touchdowns in week one too.
Yeah, against Gus Bradley. Yeah. So some things just never change, right?
Yes.
But yeah, so even if Brandon Cooks is one of the best receivers in the game, they haven't been super efficient targeting him. But now here's, you know, definitely what I wanted to get into a little bit. So the loss of Bosa, right? The Texans are extremely good running the ball left and outside the tackles. Mm-hmm. They average pretty much about 0.4 EPA per rush. If you don't know, at least 75% of NFL teams average a negative EPA per rush by the end of the season. So the fact that they're pretty much gaining 0.4 points every time they've run the ball left and outside the tackles is pretty impressive. And even running between the tackle and the guard has been a net positive for them. So think about where Bosa lines up 90% of the time, and now replace him with Chris Rome for Kyle Van Noy, and you have pretty much an all-pro left tackle in Laremy Tunsil run blocking for them. So this is, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to do this guy, this type of report, because you can kind of see that how the impact of Bosa is going to be big if the Texans decide to take advantage of it.
Yeah, and I think obviously this is a big game, of course, for you know, Austin Johnson and Morgan Fox, because they're going to have to you know, essentially step up and be better at setting the line of scrimmage, because you don't have that luxury of knowing that Joey is going to be able to set the edge on the opposite side of them. So Laremy Tunsil is a fantastic offensive tackle. I think you know, it's unfortunate because it's basically by default that he's like the best left tackle in the game right now, because everybody else is injured.
Oh, yeah.
But he's playing really well, man. He's every single time I see a clip on Twitter, he's just steamrolling folks. And so it's not a surprise to me that, you know, they are positive rush per play when running towards him. Kenyon Green, their left tackle, obviously a very fantastic run blocking guard who we all liked, obviously a little bit less than Zion, but you know, similar approach to the Chargers last year, just run left behind your two best offensive linemen. And you know, it doesn't get much more simple than that.
Or you just run right at Jerry Tillery, which he hasn't been on the field much this year, but
my God, dude, his pass rush win rate, I cannot believe that he has regressed that much, and he's supposedly in the prime of his athletic career.
Yeah, just crazy. The Texans defense, look, their run defense is horrendous. Like, I've been the Austin Ekeler stuff, I'll save it for the end of the week. If he shows out, you know, come at me on Twitter, I'm totally open to it. If he sucks against this pathetic Texans run defense that allows a positive EPA per rush in 4 out of 6 run gaps, then I will be taking my victory lap. But this is a get right game for the Chargers. You know, running outside the tackles has been extremely effective, or running in the tackle or end gap, running left pretty much has been really effective. So Matt Filer, like, I'm looking at you, like, this is like your bounce back game after a pretty bad showing against the Jags. Jamari's going to have a better time in the run game than the pass game, because they suck on the edges when teams run right at them to the offense's left side. Teams like to run a lot in the right guard gap. So between the guard and the center on the right side, they've run 25 times. This could be the product of playing the Colts. Are the Colts an inside zone team?
No, but they have Quentin Nelson. Well, I guess he's left guard.
Well, Glowinski, or well, Ryan Kelly's pretty much an all pro. So like running on his, so like running to the right side between the guard and the center has been pretty positive for offenses against the Texans. So this is a get right game for the Chargers run game, but again, I'm not holding my breath because they haven't been good yet. And now they just lost their best offensive lineman.
Yeah, I think you obviously have to change the kind of run style that you have with Jamari. I mean, you're not going to ask him to do a lot of the outside zone toss looks that you do with Slater. But, you know, maybe you do more duo, more split zone, more inside zone, and really just lean into who you have at center and right guard and left guard. And hopefully, you know, Matt Filer can get back to form from last year.
Yeah. Okay, last thing, Texans rusher. So Damian Pierce is obviously getting the bulk of the work. You know, he hasn't been bad as a rusher. He's still averaging a negative EPA per rush, but most running backs do, averaging about 3.87 yards per carry. Burkhead's doing much worse, but again, Burkhead killed us last year, so I don't think we can really talk that much shit on him. But I would say as of right now, Pierce is the better running back.
Do you know by chance where Pierce's EPA ranks?
I don't, but
is he like middle of the pack, or obviously
probably higher than middle of the pack? If you go over to my friend at Tage FB Analytics on Twitter, he has a website. It should be in his bio, or if you scroll down and you see rushing yards over expected, that'll give you a bunch of stuff regarding rushing statistics for individual rushers. You can check that out there. But yeah, just quickly for the Chargers, just doing our, you know, usual self-scouting. So again, the standard distribution for a Brandon Staley defense, a lot of six-man boxes. and splitting up between 5 and 7 man boxes on average. When Brandon Staley is a known pass, obviously he's going to run a lot of light boxes. So a lot of 6 and 5 man boxes more than 7 and 8. When he is in known run, which hasn't been like that often, but when teams run the ball on the Chargers, they have been utilizing a little bit of a heavier box with more 7 and 8 man boxes than 5. But it's interesting, you know, the pass rate over expected thing I've been using to like for the formations, teams have thrown on the Chargers more than any team or any defense in the NFL over expected. So I think teams do fear this Chargers D line, but without Bosa, I don't know how much that changes, right? Like that, it could be pretty massive until he comes back.
Yeah. I don't know if you've looked at Football Outsiders and I said this yesterday, but you know, they break down like rushing yards, of course, by level, right? So like defensive line, second level, open field, and the Chargers rank very good in the defensive line and second level categories. It's just the open field. So you're having a lot of issues with your corners and your safeties. And that's really the big time issue right now. So Chargers defensive line has been really playing outstanding. Even against the Jaguars, I thought they did a lot of good things. They just need to get more sound in the back end and run fits and things like that.
Yeah, totally agree. So looking at the Chargers and how they've performed out of each personnel. So, I mean, the offense has just not been there. So like everything is pretty much negative right now. Out of 11, they're averaging negative 0.03 EPA. Out of 12, they're averaging negative 0.07. And then, so they don't really run a ton of other formations. So it's pretty much 11 and 12. And, you know, it's just disappointing, even though they are passing over expected in every single formation. Just not having Keenan kind of hurts you in 11 and 12 personnel, where you kind of require him to get open quickly and let others do their thing. But maybe this changes this weekend, I hope.
Yeah, like people are obviously not going to like what's happening to this playbook, but I think you just need to make it more simple and give Justin more freebies and just allow him to be efficient and get back to that sort of thing, get in a groove. And then when that happens, then you can kind of start opening it up a little bit and taking more deep shots. But I think the focus has to be getting back on track from a rhythm standpoint, sustaining drives, not necessarily, you know, a ton of play action deep shots to Mike Williams or whoever else is running deep routes at this point.
Yeah. And again, we just want to, that three and out rate is one of the reasons why, you know, sustaining drives obviously plays into that. In terms of out of each offensive formation. So I texted this to Tyler, like they've actually been pretty good out of empty this year. Last year, they were not that good. They ranked, I think like in the low
20s. Tyler said like 21 or 22. Yeah.
What 21. Yeah. 21 and 22 in EPA from empty. So, you know, a little bit of a change and it's been working, but they've kind of sucked under center. I don't know. Maybe there's just a lot of things that, you know, kind of contributed to all of this, but nothing's really been efficient. Like the two main formations, the Chargers run most of their personnel and they haven't been efficient. So just a little bit disappointing on that front. So, you know, looking at how the Chargers have performed throwing to each part of the field, the main takeaway for me, and I had this thing last year, they never throw the ball over the middle. I don't know what it is. The best offense is throw the ball, target the ball over the middle, because that's the most efficient place to throw the ball. And the Chargers just don't do it. It's like if I had a Justin Herbert heat map, it would look like Russell Wilson in Seattle. And that's while like Herbert has the arm to make those difficult throws, like you don't always want to put him in these difficult situations. So I like, if anything, heat maps are kind of more of a coordinator thing than a QB thing. Like I know people clown on Russ for that, and I think there is some validity to that being a Russ problem, but like I don't think this is a Herbert problem, because he has the ability to make those tight window throws over the middle. But I feel like everything's just spot or stick, where everything's going towards the sideline. And even though Herbert can make those throws more time, like not more times than not, but like there's more variance throwing outside, I think, and it's just overall less efficient than throwing over the middle.
Yeah, and obviously there's a health impact there, because your two best guys over the middle, in my opinion, would be Keenan and Donald Parham.
Yeah,
and they haven't been on the field, so I'm curious to see how that changes if and when they come back. But
yeah,
obviously this is just kind of a lot more Mike Williams, a lot more Gerald Everett on the outside. So obviously that's kind of a bookmark for a later thing for me, at least.
Yeah. I know you're going to love this graph, but this is the Chargers run game by run gap. As you can see, everything is negative. And
Jesus Christ.
The least negative is running left outside the tackle, which, can't really, I don't know how much they do that now with Jamari out there, but this is a really depressing graph for me, just because, like, you invested all this money, the two first round picks in your offensive line, and just nothing has been able to work so far at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, that's the negative outside the left tackle is definitely surprising, because that's obviously where you run mostly behind Rashawn. But
yeah,
I think obviously that kind of points to how much Matt Filer has struggled as well. And so, this is a big couple of weeks for him individually. I think you could make an argument that he's the most important player over the next few weeks in order for this offense to get back on track.
Yeah. And I think it's mostly negative, because even like there's certain instances where the Chargers will run left on like third or fourth down outside the tackles, especially that Chiefs game where they did it twice, got a first down, and then they did it again and got stopped. So like in these high leverage situations, the EPA you lose will be much higher than the EPA you gain, if that makes sense. So
yeah.
That's kind of why it's negative. If I use like yards per carry, which I can always incorporate later, it could be a little bit of a different story. Chargers run defense, which is the last graph I'm going to show. They've done really bad when teams run left and between the tackle and the guard. So this isn't necessarily a Bosa thing. I think we can just collectively blame Tillery, because this is kind of where the guard on zone runs are going towards. So teams are pretty much gaining a point every time they've run left between the tackle and the guard. But I will say a large chunk of this does come from the James Robinson 50-yard run, which I believe was between the tackle and guard, or the tackle and guard spot. So overall, the Chargers run defense hasn't been that bad, but, kind of skewed by that one run, which, is just unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, really, because they played mostly pretty well against the Chiefs, too, in that regard, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire had that one big run, which would have been outside the right end. So,
Totally.
Yeah. So obviously you have to keep an eye how Chris Rumpf and Calvin Oy do in that regard too.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all I had for my report.
Nope. Looks like Arjun accidentally exited. Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. We'll see if he comes back in a second here. But I think there we go. Nice.
Look, the red button means stop sharing here in the Blue Studio. I'm so sorry. I just meant to stop sharing share.
That's okay, man. That's okay. All right, we'll wrap this episode up of Chargers Analytics with Arjun. Your favorite league of bets this week, Arjun?
I love Browns -1. Browns are one of the best rushing teams in the NFL. Falcons can't stop the run. It's weird. It's basically, you just pick a winner, and that's what the play is. And I think the Browns are the better team. And there's been a lot of weird love for the Falcons lately, even though they don't have a great team. Though they might have a great, a decent play caller in Arthur Smith. But I'm backing the Browns, who I think are the better team, the smarter team, and should win at the line of scrimmage. I also like the Chiefs money line against the Bucs. Like, the Bucs can't move the ball, so I would rather favor the Chiefs, who, even though they had like a bad loss against the Colts, they were still a really good offense, and they just struggled in the special teams game and in these high leverage situations inside the goal line. And one player prop I like, I don't know if it's up anymore, but I was able to take Rashad Penny to score a touchdown +150 against the Lions. The Lions have allowed 7 rushing touchdowns in 3 games to start the year. So at least one rushing touchdown in each game. Their run defense isn't that great, and they've allowed the most plays inside the 5-yard line. So they've allowed 17 plays to occur inside the five. Weirdly enough, the Seahawks have had 0 plays inside the 5-yard line. So I think it's time for them to see some positive regression. And when Penny gets a good number of carries, which I think he will in this game, he does score touchdowns, as we saw towards the end of last year. So to recap, Browns -1, Chiefs money line, and then Rashad Penny anytime touchdown. And also bonus play, I would take Kaimi Fairbairn's over 1.5 field goals against our Chargers. So I think the Texans move the ball a decent amount in this game, even if JC comes back. Like, I think they'll get it over the 50, and he hasn't missed this year, and he's hit at least 2 field goals in every game. So those are my favorite bets that I've placed and would give out.
There we go. We got a kicker prop bet on the show tonight. Love that. At some point, we're going to get some kind of like Arjun's parlay or something in here, because obviously doing fantastic yeah. work. Appreciate that. Make sure, obviously, you guys and follow Arjun on Twitter, as well as check out his own podcast with Taze, where you get a lot of data-driven information. You know, those two continue to crush it over there. So, Arjun, any final thoughts, man, before we head out for the evening?
Yeah, I mean, I do hope the Chargers win this week, like, at least for my sanity. I might, you know, I think it's they suffer 2 big losses, but this is still a more talented team than the Texans. And like, I'm not expecting a blowout, but I at least hope they win. Like, it would just be a tragedy if they lost, because I think that would send a lot of fans spiraling down and in a path that we don't want to be in.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like Justin is feeling like a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more confident with where he's at physically. So I know, I forget her name. I think it's Stefania Bell was talking about, you know, it kind of takes a couple games for quarterbacks with rib injuries to kind of figure it out a little bit. And obviously with the other injuries, you know, we'll see what kind of happens. But I do think we'll see Justin be a little bit sharper this week. And obviously, hopefully that leads to more points on the board and hopefully a win.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, appreciate it. Appreciate everyone here in the chat tonight. We'll be going live, like Tyler said, on Saturday morning, doing a little fundraising show. So definitely stay tuned for that. Hopefully you can come and bring some super chats and donate some money to a fellow member of the Chargers fandom that's in a bit of a tough situation right now with some medical bills with a brand new baby. So that's going to do it for us tonight, guys. As always, bolt up.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.